Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I feel like a locomotive sipping, drinking Arizona. Mixtape just around the corner. Did a lot in California. Can't wait to drop this, don't you? Yeah, they gon' have fun with that. Smash like Songa, man. My song's gon' break through like a running.
Hey, everybody, welcome back to the podcast. It is always Up to Speed with Formula One. Today is Sunday, April 7th, 2024. My name is Mark Daly, and here to, well, I'm welcoming you here to a Sunday in Hell. And I'm not just referring to what I thought was a fairly boring Japanese Grand Prix, but it's also the day of Paris-Roubaix, which is one of the classic cycling races. And it's a real monster, and the name is aptly deserved. But I thought it was also somewhat appropriate. I thought the worst thing you could do is sit here and kind of rehash what was a fairly pedestrian Japanese Grand Prix. Anyways, we'll get into that in just a moment. First of all, I just want to give a quick shout out to the Race Weekend magazine. Go and check them out at the Race Weekend.com and use my promo code ScuderiaPod at checkout to save 10% on a year subscription. And also check out what the folks at RacingExclusives.com have for unique Formula One merchandise with a certificate of authenticity. And again, you can check them out at RacingExclusives.com. So we're going to jump right into this. And I was only just kidding about the weekend or the Sunday in Hell thing. Well, not about Paris-Roubaix. That's, like I say, actually very well deserved that one. I can't wait to check that out this evening. But yeah, four races into it, Max Verstappen wins again. So his third win from, what is it, four races now? So yeah, I mean, the only one he didn't win was 2 weeks ago because he retired in Australia. And it looks like after four races, it's setting up to be pretty much more the same. All right, well, let's just get right into it. First of all, let's just go down the driver's standings. Max Verstappen leading the way with 77 points in the Drivers' Championship, which is 13 points ahead of his Red Bull teammate, Sergio Perez, who currently has 64. Charles Leclerc from Ferrari has 59. Carlos Sainz from Ferrari has 59. And then Lando Norris rounds out the top five with 37. And then going down the rest of the top 10, we have Oscar Piastri from McLaren, George Russell from Mercedes, Fernando Alonso from Aston Martin. Lewis Hamilton is in ninth in the Drivers' Championship. And then Lance Stroll rounds out the top 10. So moving on over to the Constructors' Championship, a little bit of daylight now between Red Bull and the rest of the pack. That was fairly close after the previous round in in Australia a couple of weeks back. RBR currently 141 points, which puts them top in the Constructors. And you have Ferrari with 120. McLaren has 69. Mercedes has 34, which is just a single point ahead of Aston Martin with 33. Then just going down the rest of the Constructors, you have RB, then Haas, Williams, Sauber, and then Alpine. So Williams, Sauber, and Alpine have not scored a single point in the championship so far this year. Okay, we're going to get into the super important stuff because we've got some changes here in the Fantasy League. So moving up now into first place is Greg Andruff and the Red Beards. Kerry Duro F1 dropping a spot down into second. Nakunda Racing, Bettengura William moves up into third. DJ Bean drops a place, goes down into fourth. Well, I see he's dropped a place. Anyway, DJ Bean down into fourth, holding steady at fifth and sixth. We have Tails I Win, and then I'm not even going to attempt to pronounce this because this is one of these renamed gobbledygook names. Anyways, Kwame Sarpong is a sixth. I'm sure there was a nice clever name beforehand. Now it's just a bunch of numbers. Anyways, dropping down into seventh is Hamilton eight-time champs. Dropping down to eighth, pardon me, is Nick Pobednik F1, and moving up into nine is last year's champion Michael Cronier and El Predestinu 216. That's a bit of a mouthful, Michael. Anyways, that's the first time we've seen Michael in the top 10 this year, and then Andrew Taylor, gosh, can't get it out this afternoon, as I mentioned, holding fifth place. So we've got the past two winners of our Fantasy League in the top 10 at the moment. And then moving up into 10th is Goldstone, so there you go. All right, let's take a look now. Let's go over some of the news, and we'll just kind of go down some of the different storylines we saw in the race yesterday. All right, well, the first story we're going to talk about is the opening lap crash that we saw between Danny Ricciardo and Alex Albon. Totally, this was a racing incident. I mean, you go from start finish into those very tight, well, not really tight, but you have a very, very fast entry into turn one, then into turn two, then you hit the Suzuka S's, you got the pack, you got everybody fighting for position. It's quite condensed, it's quite narrow, and Danny Ricciardo, before kind of moving to where he did on the track and, making contact with poor Alex Albon, putting him onto the grass, both of them going off the track. He did check left over his shoulder to see where Lance Stroll was, and that's all it was. It was just one of those things. It was a racing incident. Ricciardo, who's been under a lot of focus and discussion and criticism over the first three races of the season, he called it a singular moment. So the exact quote was after the race, today is a singular moment. I don't look at today and think, oh man, this year, like when it rains, it pours or whatever. I just feel like it was one of those things. We know across that 24 races, it's likely that maybe I'm involved in another lap one incident. There's just probability that these things kind of happen. It obviously sucks when they do, but I don't look at it any more than today being kind of a singular incident. Of course, it would have been nice to get the race under our belt and try to show what a little bit of something that I felt we were starting to show yesterday. We'll do that in China. I'm actually testing on Tuesday, so the laps I missed today, I'll get back on Tuesday. Yeah, it was just one of those things. I mean, that's the problem, and that's been one of the criticisms of, say, Sergio Perez, who has the best car on the grid available to him, and doesn't always qualify high up as he should do. And if you're not out to the front, the further you get back in the pack at the start of the race, there's more of a likelihood that something might happen. And with Ricciardo just kind of missing out, getting into the top 10 shootout like he did, I mean, he was very close to his teammate Yuki Tsunoda. I don't have the qualifying times up here in front of me at the moment, but it was pretty close. I think it was about 0.05 of a second, so 0.05 second between the two of them. That's not a lot of time, but it's frustrating for sure. But the interesting thing, at least from that crash, is that poor old Alex Albon said that he was worried about the spares and everything that Williams have available to them before he actually went into the tire wall there. And what we saw a couple of weeks ago in Australia, that Alex benefited from the fact that he had some problems and damage on his car, and they just basically threw a new set of stickers on Logan Sargeant's car and let Alex race that one and withdrew Logan instead. And they're in a bit of a tough spot now, because he was asked after the race when he started thinking about the complications and the fallout and that knock-on effect of this latest incident would have on a team that's clearly struggling and just doesn't have the parts available. And he basically said, I immediately thought of that. It was a concern before I even hit the wall, which, after he made contact with Danny Ricciardo, took about a second and a half, 2 seconds at the very most, maybe not even that long. So that was a little bit crazy. So before we get to China in a couple of weeks here, that it's a big thing. I mean, let's just take a look here. I'm just going to pull up the schedule and see exactly when China's coming up. The Chinese Grand Prix for 2024 is going to be in 2 weeks, so we've got another week off in between, and so I'm looking forward to this one, because it's been a number of years since we've been to the Shanghai International Circuit. Anyways, I don't want to get too far ahead of that. Just going back to Alex Albon, some of the quotes attributed to him after the race was, quote, "It's exactly what we don't need. The impact itself was relatively low speeds, but it's the way I hit the tire wall. Normally we have this kind of plastic barrier, the Armco, but this was much more dug in, and it really stops very very violently. They're the questions I'm worried about, not for me, but for the car, because that's where you can do damage. We haven't had the car back yet. We need to assess it. Hopefully it's okay. And then he went on to say, I had a grip advantage on soft tires, kind of surprised with the grip I had of turn two, and then I was able to pull underneath him and then have a good run into three. More about just trying to get him a little bit off line at turn three and try and find a way for four, five, six, and seven to see if I could upset his line a little bit. Obviously, just one of them, he didn't see me clearly. I tried to back out of it at the last minute. There was a moment where I realized that he hadn't seen me here the way he's pulling across, so I hit the brakes and tried to get out of it, but it was almost too far alongside him. He was still coming across, so I couldn't avoid it. It's no secret that we're going through a tough time with it at the moment, with the parts that we've got. This is going to hurt us for sure, end quote. So the team subsequently, since the end of the race yesterday, has said that they're actually going to send the chassis, Albon chassis, back to the UK for repairs before them. They head off to China for the Chinese Grand Prix 2 weekends from now. So this is, this is a big deal for them. So Williams team's principal, Jim Zavalls, said that they would, they still wouldn't have a spare chassis in China. He had to say then, quote, the third chassis at the moment won't be with us until Miami, a long way away. In terms of the chassis, if you put all your resources, everything you possibly had within the organization on it, it could be 8 to 10 weeks that you pretty much get a chassis done from freezer to something to actually built and out there. And that's by the time you get a third chassis. It takes longer for the first ones as you get used to the process. Clearly, we don't have the whole organization just working on that. We're working at the same time on spares and updates, trying to get the throughputs. In our particular case, we've clearly never had the intention of being here without three chassis. The intention was to have three right at the beginning of the year. It's an outcome of just an overload within the system, the complexity of this car, the amount of that we are trying to push through. In terms of complexity of it, it's enormous. The chassis is thousands and thousands of pieces that you're trying to bring together at the same time. And that's the end of the quote. So yeah, and the other thing too was later on the race, Logan Sargeant actually put it into the gravel trap, not too far from the end of the race, and that must have been a heart stopping moment. I mean, it wasn't fortunately too high speed. He was able to bring it to a rest, and there was no damage done, other than maybe to the underside of the car going through the gravel, but at least in that case, it was a minor damage rather than having two cars severely damaged on the same afternoon, which would have just been an insult to industry. Insults to injury. My goodness, I should have had a cup of coffee before I sat down. Okay, let's talk about Mercedes now, because Toto Wolff, team principal, says that he felt that a podium was possible on Sunday without what he called an atrocious first stint at the Japanese Grand Prix. So I think we've seen a little bit more from Mercedes over the past couple of races, and let's talk about it now. Let's take a look. I mean, just purely on the way that you look at the Constructors' Championship after four races, I think it tells a very, very good story. And I think it sums up nicely what we've seen on the track since we got the season running just a month and a half ago at the beginning of March. Red Bull are still clearly a class of their own. The RB20 is a fantastic car. You've had, they haven't finished outside of the top five, and they did have that retirement with Max in Australia a couple of weekends ago. Ferrari is a pleasant surprise. I mean, they are just about 20 something points behind Red Bull in the constructors at the moment, and they're close, but they're not quite close enough. If you look now, you had a 1-2 in Australia 2 weeks ago with Carlos Sainz winning, Charles Leclerc second. So I mean, it's a bit of a great start to the year, especially for Carlos Sainz. He hasn't finished outside of the top three, and we're going to talk about him in a minute. Charles, a little bit different. I mean, he's had two P4s. He had the second place in Australia 2 weeks ago, and then a P7 in Saudi Arabia. So not really the greatest start for him. And right now, at the moment, I mean, if you were to end the season today, I mean, you could make the argument that perhaps Ferrari has decided to part ways with the wrong driver for 2025. contrived partner up side, Lewis Hamilton. Again, when you look at Carlos Sainz, he might be driving beyond himself at the moment, really auditioning some of those different seats that that might come available. I mean, it's who's to say maybe he doesn't get offered that that second seat at Red Bull for next year. I mean, would he be as fast as Max Verstappen? Great question. Who really knows? Would he be better, more consistent than Sergio Perez? Probably. But, you know, there's also that that open seat at Mercedes, which you would think would still be very, very attractive. And again, that story we talked about, what was it, about a week and a half ago now, with Eddie Jordan, former team principal of the team of the same name, Jordan, back in the day, saying that he has a feeling that if it doesn't work out with some of these other potential landing spots, he could actually end up partnering Fernando Alonso at Aston Martin next year. Because Lance Stroll, come on. What is it with him? I'm tired of having this discussion. I mean, so far this year, I mean he's been in the top 10 twice. He was P10 in Bahrain, P8 in Australia, finished 12th in Japan yesterday. Retired in Saudi Arabia when he crashed, put it into the Armco barrier and the opening stages of that race. But it's the same thing, right? I mean, there's a big delta between himself and whatever teammate he seems to be up against. And you know, it's always interesting, no matter what challenge he seems to be faced with, the team always seems to have an excuse for that. But, you know, basically, I think just kind of going back to the original point, Red Bull, Ferrari, McLaren, Mercedes, Aston Martin, I think that's exactly the way that, that it sums up the season so far. Red Bull in a class of their own, Ferrari close, but not quite close enough. McLaren kind of a little bit on their own, not quite as good as Ferrari most of the time. And a little bit better than Mercedes and Aston Martin. Both of them are a little bit up and down and inconsistent here and there. And, the fact that they're only separated by 1 point, the Constructors' Championship after four races, I think shows nicely or illustrates nicely the, how level, say, Mercedes and Aston Martin are at the moment. It certainly will be interesting, several weeks from now when we start seeing the first round of upgrades going on the cars as teams start to develop these things, but where they start to iterate on the design and car and improve on them. It'll be interesting to see like if anybody has like one of those McLaren moments that we saw last year, that you get some of the upgrades on the car and it literally is like flicking a switch and night and day, because they were something, pretty impressive last year after the Austrian Grand Prix and then Silverstone afterwards. Once Lando and Oscar both got the upgrades on that car, they never really looked back afterwards. So could we see the same this year for Aston Martin, Mercedes, McLaren? Possibly. Could we even see the same with Ferrari? I suppose it's very possible as well. I mean, the big question would be, is Ferrari going to be able to close that gap? Because it was interesting last year, right, that the discussion was that, on pace, they're pretty close to the that one lap pace that Red Bull has. This year, it was, Fred Vasseur was saying a couple of weeks ago that they don't quite have the overall pace that they did, say, last year. But just all round, the car is much better than it was in 2023. So that is interesting, but I mean they firmly have established themselves seconds in the running order this year, and so far I mean they're not really all that far behind Red Bull in the Constructors' Championship. I mean, Red Bull 141, Ferrari 120. That could obviously grow pretty quick when you look at the way that things are going. I mean, we've seen so far this season, out of four races, we've seen three Red Bull 1-2s and a Ferrari 1-2. And that one, it was going to be a little bit of anomaly. As great as it was to see the two Ferrari cars leading the way in Australia, in Melbourne, 2 weeks ago, of course, they didn't have to worry about Max Verstappen and Sergio Perez. Just, the car just wasn't going to perform at that track on that weekend. And regardless if Max had that brake issue that forced him out, he might have been gobbled up and passed by the Ferraris anyways, but we'll never know. I mean, hindsight is 2020, of course, but fascinating to look at. Anyways, going to take a quick break, going to come back on the flip side. We'll keep moving ahead and taking a look at the stories. I'll pick up on I did start talking about Total Wolf and what he called an atrocious first stint at the Japanese Grand Prix. Promise I'll get back to that one in just a moment, so please don't go away. I'll be right back. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
All right, welcome back to the show. And yes, let's dial it back a little bit. Started talking about Total Wolf and what he believes could have been an opportunity for a podium at the Japanese Grand Prix this past weekend, and got a little bit sidetracked and went off on a tangent, as I am known to do. Anyways, dialing back on that, Toto was speaking to Sky Sports F1 after the race and said, quote, "We ended up where we started and it was just very difficult. We had a second and third stint that was super quick and we would have been racing for a podium, but for an atrocious first stint. We need to find out what it was. Was it too hot? Were we over managing? I think it was right. Was the right thing to do at the beginning because it looked pretty stable in terms of lap times. They were not pulling away too much, the direct competitors, but then it suddenly dropped like 2 seconds a lap and 2.5 seconds per lap. In that moment, it was clear it wouldn't last," end quote. So, you know, very interesting there that, again, it seems that Mercedes seemed to be a little bit stymied and a little bit frustrated by something that they weren't expecting. And one of these things that seems to manifest during the course of a race or a race weekend, they have to go back and take a hard look at the data. Because, I mean, George Russell at the end there was certainly, was doing pretty good and flying along quite nicely. But he did make up places during the race because he qualified ninth, finished seventh. So not a bad afternoon. Lewis was a little bit frustrated, only finishing P9. And it was interesting, too, because earlier in the weekend, Lewis especially felt like that the car was feeling as good as it has done over the past couple of years, even though the qualifying and maybe some of the practice times didn't actually reflect that. Talking more about that, Lewis had to say, quote, "I don't know what the different strategy would have been, whether we stayed on the medium at the start, but we had two really terrible hard tires to run through. A real challenge today. I think I picked up a bit of damage at the beginning when Charles came around the outside and had a huge understeer for the first stint, and I couldn't turn the car through any of the corners. So that is why I let George go by. The hard tires were pretty bad, as I said, but the medium tire was better. In hindsight, it looks like we should have had two medium tires, but in general, the car was pretty bad today." So that's kind of interesting just to, you know, juxtapose that and compare that to some of the comments made by Lewis earlier in the week. Now, talking about McLaren, so Lando Norris felt like he was fighting a losing battle against the two quicker Ferrari cars. And again, you know, they're currently third in the Constructors' Championship, and Ferrari is just on pace and everything else, just better than the and faster than the two McLarens at the moment. They seem to be in this weird kind of little area where they're a little bit faster than the Mercedes and the Astons, but obviously not quite fast enough to keep up with the Ferraris. Anyways, Lando was interviewed by motorsport.com when he was asked about his experiences out there. He said, quote, it was as expected, to be honest with you. It was hard in the beginning, but when you're trying to push to keep up with a quicker car or push to stay ahead of the Ferraris, which were quicker, you hurt the tires and it's just a kind of bit of a spiral, fighting a losing battle out there. So not a bad day where we kind of expected to be in the end, which is behind Ferrari. It's where we've been all year. Yesterday, we just excelled. I put in some very strong laps and made us look maybe a bit too good. And today it was a little bit more back to reality. So if you go back and take a look at the qualifying. So let's just quickly, didn't mention that earlier in the show. So we had a front row lockout for Red Bull for the Japanese Grand Prix with Max Verstappen and Sergio Perez in row one. Row two, we had Lando Norris and Carlos Sainz. Row three was Fernando Alonso and Oscar Piastri. So we had, the two McLaren cars looking really good, getting up, qualifying in third and sixth, respectively. Then on row four, you had Lewis Hamilton and Charles Leclerc. And then row five, you had George Russell and Yuki Tsunoda. So, I think that's very impressive. I think that Lando's summed it up nicely, that they maybe did a little bit too good on Saturday, maybe raised expectations a little higher than they should have been. So let's talk about Carlos Sainz. So I was kind of saying it as not really a bit of a joke, but I kind of said at the beginning of the year that this was going to be the home of the Carlos Sainz fan club. Love a good underdog story, but I mean, he really has done very, very well through four races of the season this year. I mean, he is the guy without a drive for 2025. And after the four races, I mean, he's got two P3s, he's got a win, and he's only 4 points behind his teammate, Charles Leclerc, who's got two P4s, a P3, and then a second place finish in the season so far. So, I think that's, really, really good to see, because it is a nice thing to see when somebody like that who has lost their drive to somebody else. Of course, Lewis Hamilton's taking Carlos's seat at Ferrari next year, but he really has done really, really good. I kind of really wonder where he could be had he not been forced out of the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix a couple of weeks ago because of that because of appendicitis and having to have the operation and all that. Anyways, after the race, Carlos was interviewed and gave the following answer. Quote, I was hopeful of achieving a podium that in the end we managed to achieve, even if it was a very tough race, very strategic. The track conditions had changed a lot throughout the race. We went from a very sunny track that we hadn't had a weekend to a very cloudy track. The degradation went down a lot and you could push a lot more on the tires halfway through the race. This changed the whole situation quite a lot. At one point, I thought the podium was impossible, but then with the new hard tires, the pace was mega and I could get back onto the podium. Then he went on to say, quote, we knew kind of our race pace was better than our qualifying pace. Still probably not enough to go for win, because obviously starting P4 and given how good the race pace of the Red Bull is, it's almost impossible to think about a win, end quote. Actually, I just need to go back and make a quick correction. I was just looking at my notes here, and I think I may have mistakenly said that Charles Leclerc finished seventh in Saudi Arabia, when in fact he did much better than that. He finished on the podium with a P3, so my apologies for that. I think he also had the fastest lap that race as well. So, I mean, Charles has had a pretty good start to the season as well, but, just kind of going back to Carlos Sainz, really excited for him that he's had such a great start to the season, despite it potentially going sideways with that that incident with the appendicitis and the operation in Saudi Arabia. I mean, he came back and really winning that race in Australia a couple of weeks back, and then finishing on the podium again this weekend is fantastic for him. So I'm sure he's got no shortage of people looking to sign him and secure his services for 2025 and beyond. So we'll keep watching that story with interest moving forward. Okay, just talking a little bit more about Charles Leclerc and also Lewis Hamilton. Talked about it, or just touched on it really briefly earlier, but there was a clash between the two of them, and Lewis felt that that left his car with a massive understeer. That's exactly how he termed it, caused by a bit of a tap and an opening lap bump that he had with Ferrari's Charles Leclerc. He felt like he was suffering from excessive understeer, and as I mentioned the quote a few minutes ago, that's why he moved over and let his teammate George Russell pass. Going back, just a little bit more detailed quote on that from Lewis, talking to in the scrum after the race, saying, quote, "I mean, the car is never what I would have hoped it would be. It's never what we hoped it would be. I got some damage in the first stint and the restart with Charles, and I had massive understeer, like huge understeer. So that's why I decided to let George by, because he seemed quicker. I just couldn't turn the car, and it took us two stints to finally dial more and more wing to make up for that loss. Last stint, I was better, but it was too late. I had 10 seconds to regain. I don't know if you can take too many positives from the weekend. I mean, the car which has finished, which is good, but we were like 7th, 8th, 9th fastest. We weren't quick enough in qualifying, so we were starting too far back to challenge for the podiums. Early in the race, our pace was simply not good enough too. We decided to go with the hard tire at the end of the red flag, as we felt there wasn't much threat from behind, and it was our best way to offset and try something different. Towards the end of that stint, we were really struggling with the low grip. We couldn't stop early, as there's too much traffic in the window, so we stayed out until we had cleared it. Unfortunately, by then we had lost a chunk of time. The second and third stints were more encouraging, but we lost too much time by that point to get back into the mix. We know that we're not quick enough at the moment, so we will continue to work hard to improve that. Despite the challenging results, it had been a useful weekend to learn more about our car and develop our understanding of the W15, end quote. I think that's a good point, that maybe something that doesn't get enough coverage, or maybe enough mention, is the fact that there was that red flag that after Albon and Ricciardo's crashed at the beginning of the race, took them about, what was it, 20, 25 minutes thereabouts, so almost half an hour, to get that tire barrier, get the cars out, get the tire barrier, the gravel trap, everything all reset, get it back and certified, and ensure that it was all reassembled properly to the correct standards, so they could go racing again. And during that time, I mean, as Lewis said, I mean, the weather changed, or was it Lewis or Carlos? Doesn't really matter. I mean, the weather did change during that time. It did take a significantly longer amount of time to run that race with some, I mean, it wasn't super hot and super cold, but, these cars are very, very finicky, and even the littlest things can change some of the inputs into this car and how they behave. So finally, just want to talk about Lance Stroll very, very briefly as I wrap this one up. So his top speed radio rant triggered by F1 tire offset, says Aston Martin. This comes to us courtesy of motorsport.com. And it was funny because it was on the radio. This is one of those moments that the producers must love, because they put this into the race feed on the TV right away. And Lance had said, quote, "It's unbelievable how bad our speed is on the straight, man. It's like a different category," end quote. And he was almost kind of like laughing to himself. So that this is sort of like similar to what, Fernando Alonso's very famous GP2 engine comment that he made at the Japanese Grand Prix, which, was also Honda's home Grand Prix. And that's when McLaren had Honda engines. So that was quite embarrassing. After the race, Aston Martin team principal Mike Crack said they looked into what was going on and why Stroll was complaining about that, and actually found it was nothing that had to do with like the top speed is lacking through too much drag or not enough engine power. He said it was actually caused by rivals around Stroll having better tires, which gave them much better traction out of the corner, so they could accelerate and get better top speed. So Crack was interviewed by motorsport.com. He said, quote, "This is something I've looked at. Actually, we see across the field that there are very small differences in terms of straight line performance. performance. But when you have that at different times of the race, there are different tire conditions and the acceleration of the corners is a different one. I think a lot of these comments come from such situations. If you look at the power limited data, you see that all the cars are very, very similar, but the tire conditions at various times of the race, you're offset by 10, 12, 15 laps of tires, and then you accelerate completely differently. End quote. So there you go. So he's putting down Lance's comments that he was so much slower compared to everyone else that his tires were older than everyone else. Yeah, okay, fair enough. I'll take Mike at his word. But again, it seems that every time Lance underperforms, they always have a convenient excuse for that. Anyways, going to wrap it up right there. Not too much more to mention in this one. It was more of a strategic battle, if anything, and nobody was really going to get catch up with the two Red Bulls this weekend. So let's just leave it at that. Going to go into a week off before we head off to Shanghai in China for the Chinese Grand Prix here in 2 weeks. Until then, we'll be back again on Thursday night this week for the regular weekly show. And thank you for joining me again this afternoon. If you want to help support the show, easiest way, it only costs a couple of moments of your time, doesn't cost you a single penny. Head on over to Apple Podcasts or Spotify and leave a 5-star rating and review. That helps us grow the show, which would be so very, very nice, and we'd be very, very grateful for that. And you can also give us a follow on X at ScooterFF1 Pod. I don't know why I drug that out. At ScooteryF1 Pod. There you go. And you can also send us an email at ScooteryF1 Pod@gmail.com. That's a wrap, everyone. Have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you again very soon. Bye for now.